On the Pilot TV podcast this week, we are genre hopping with Tiffany Haddish once again in season two of The After Party on Apple TV+, leaping from the frying pan into the fire with Danny Dyer, no relation, in Heat on Channel 5, and putting right what once went wrong in Paramount Plus's reboot of Quantum Leap. Oh boy. Plus, if all goes to plan, we will also have those promised Witcher interviews, assuming they happen, which they haven't yet, but hope springs eternal. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to the Pilot TV podcast, your essential guide to every show that matters, and a podcast that has just about recovered from the throwdown, no-holds-barred fight that led to this week's definitive, in air quotes, list of the best shows of the year so far. There was blood, there were tears, Kate bit several people. Speaking of which, we are joined today, as usual, by my two, you know, opponents, Kay Razy K. Ribeiro, that would be your wrestling name, and Boyd the Hammer Hilton.
Yours is quite good.
Yeah.
Are you a wrestling fan?
Am I a wrestling fan? I was a wrestling fan.
Were you?
Yeah. So in
the WWF
days. Yeah, so it's like late '80s, early '90s. Ultimate Warrior, Hulk Hogan, Demolition, The Rockers, Legion of Doom. Steady. First of all,
that's my era.
Yeah, I was about to say that's his era, and also that's like British wrestling, like Golden Greg Valentine.
About it. Not supporting our own wrestling.
Big Daddy. No, it's all bollocks. I was all about the WWF.
Giant Haystacks
or WWF as it was before the pandas came for them in a big copyright case.
Yeah, I can see you being into that. Yeah,
I loved it.
It's quite a nerdy.
But it was also that thing that, you know, I was, what, in my teenage years, and you'd argue that it wasn't fake because you were stupid. And it was,
And did you like Gladiators as well?
No, I never watched Gladiators.
Never watched Gladiators?
Never
watched
Gladiators. Ever? Now you're talking.
Wow. And that surprises me.
Yeah, sorry.
I'm worried about them bringing it back.
Because it was on ITV, you weren't allowed to watch ITV.
Yeah, that was it. Even then, I was so snooty, I wouldn't watch something that was on ITV.
Yeah, it's coming back to BBC One with loads of exciting new Gladiators.
I made a discovery the other day. A friend was talking to me about a mutual friend we have. She says, oh yeah, because her brother was in Gladiators. I'm like, what? Guess who he was? It's
her
a good
brother
one.
Was in Gladiators?
Wolf. No.
That's the only one.
We're not guessing the Gladiators. We're guessing who this person's brother is.
No.
Confused.
Okay, the brother in question is Saracen.
Wow.
What a great brother to have. Saracen.
Wow. No idea who that is.
Who's a good one?
What's Saracen doing now? Do we know?
I didn't go into it. I was just
What do you do when you're like 20 years after being a gladiator or something?
I don't know, maybe personal training?
Probably, yeah.
They're so fit.
I think he's a pit fighter.
Anyway, it's coming back, hosted by Bradley Walsh and his son, and it's being produced by my friend at Hungry Bear, the TV company. It's going to be a huge deal.
Your friend, the Hungry Bear?
That's the name of his company.
That's another gladiator name.
Right, okay.
Dan
the Hungry Bear.
Husband of Holly Willoughby Baldwin.
Ah, okay. Yeah?
Exciting TV news. Anyway, I digress.
Yes, but yeah, so yes,
I was in WWF.
No, absolutely not. It's all staying in its gold. No, my friend Martin had Sky back in the day because it was quite unusual to have Sky.
Oh, they revived it on Sky. That was the revival of Gladiators.
No.
Oh, the wrestling.
Wrestling. Yeah, that's the proper stuff. Boy.
Sorry.
You've moved on.
Oh, look at him. Look at the hand gestures, guys. You can't see it. It's
patronizing hand gestures abound. So yes, yeah, so he had Sky and... So that was the only way you could see wrestling. And like I say, it was very bougie. People didn't have Sky back then, so we used to go around to his house and watch wrestling. It was.
You had access to Sky, and the thing that you like scuttled over to your friend's house to watch was
scuttled.
Wrestling.
Scuttled. Yeah. We scuttled over to watch wrestling. Yes, that's true. That is like, what should we have been watching, Kay? What were you watching on Sky? RTL was it?
Do you know what? I didn't have Sky. I didn't have Sky, so I didn't have that opportunity.
She did not have access to Sky. You didn't know anyone with Sky. You had no rich.
She's watching Dream Team, the famously terrible football. Well, not terrible, but not great.
I remember that was no Ted Lasso.
No, it wasn't.
No.
Anyway.
Okay. I will say, because we mentioned the best shows of the year.
Yes,
we wrangled this live on last week's Pilot Plus, so we're not going to go through it again here, but you can find it on the Empire website if you want to see what shows we thought were the best of the year.
Obviously, as soon as we recorded our Pilot Plus discussion of the top 20, I instantly thought of things that I forgot to put in it.
Of course you did.
Particularly, like Shrinking, you know, the Harrison Ford Apple thing, which is actually
really good. If only someone had put that on their original list.
Did you?
I sent it to you. Yes, but you took it out.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
Did I?
Yes, you did.
Oh, my God.
No,
so, yes, 100%.
Maybe that was because I had to try and get in other things as well. Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway.
It was a rush process.
It was a rush.
Yes, the definitive list then of the best shows of the year so far.
Yeah. Really undermining of the list.
An essential read, so go and find that. But we should talk about what we've been watching this week. What have we been watching?
I have just been plowing through Fake Profile. So that's a Spanish Netflix drama.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned it last week.
And
the erotic thriller.
Yeah.
Is it a thriller? Drama?
Yes, it is thrilling and it is a thriller. It's about...
Is it erotic?
Yes. I mean, hello. Yeah. There's so much steamy sex in there. Equal ops, boys and girls. And
well, both boys and girls get to have sex in it? Or yeah. Equal ops, nudity?
Nudity.
Okay. Oh, I see.
Yeah. And sex. One often leads to the other, boys.
Always.
But should I tell you what, I finished it. I binged about 4 or 5 episodes last night. And it is wild. It is honestly, there are so many twists and turns. But there's something that happens in it that's so batshit crazy. Even by... Oh,
is it an unrealistic
even
threesome?
Even by Spanish telenovela movements, I was like, oh, wow, that is quite the...
I'm going to have to watch this. This is very, sounds like very much up my...
Yes, alley. You can see me scheduling it in as we speak.
So anyway, just for anyone who has been watching it, I've just got to say, check out on Instagram, Rodolfo Salas, 03. He's basically the actor who plays Miguel in it, and he is mighty fine. So if you like him, check it out, because he is a personal trainer in his real life, as well as being an actor.
Former Gladiator star.
Yeah.
Pretty much, should be. And yeah, there's lots of aesthetically pleasing shots.
Anyone else you'd like to objectify while we're on this particular segment of the podcast?
No, I mean, let's see how the pod goes. I might think some more.
Right, okay, good to know. It's worth noting, while we're talking about... sweaty, sexy objectification. The air conditioning here, I don't know if it's broken, but it certainly wasn't turned on. I feel like it's now kicking in. When we came in, it was a little bit...
I still feel very hot.
Yeah. And it's not just from Fake Profile.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I watch a few episodes of that.
Yeah.
It's sizzling.
Okay.
Talking of nude actors, I went to the South Bank Sky Arts Awards over the weekend, which I'm one of the... panel of judges.
Of course you are.
And the most exciting, there were lots of very brilliant, always brilliant people there. It's always like the best award ceremony of the year because it covers all the different categories of the arts, paint, you know, artists.
I feel like you say this about the BAFTAs.
No, it's not ceremony. Just TV. It's like okay, TV, fine. Film, opera, visual arts.
Do you judge the opera, Boydie?
We judge all of it, yeah. Yeah.
Are you an opera stan? Is it a part of your soul?
So we all have different.
Would ask you.
We all have different specializations on the jury. But I do watch the operas, yeah.
What's your favourite opera?
Don't try and catch him out. Look at him. He's trying to throw you under the bus.
Madam Butterfly.
Oh, good.
That was one. Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure if he is. I just named him. Anyway, Salman Rushdie was there, right? Actual Salman Rushdie.
Wow.
Who won the Lifetime Achievement Award. It was very moving. Fantastic.
I've had Salman Rushdie.
Have you?
Yeah. Do you know where?
Go on.
The Bridget Jones's Diary premiere.
Wow.
Absolutely true.
Did you talk to him?
Absolutely did.
Oh,
I love it. I absolutely did.
What did
yeah.
you say?
Well, because I was doing the red carpet, so I literally interviewed him. I asked him questions about Bridget Jones's diary. Because that's what you do when you meet Salman
Rushdie.
That's
brilliant.
Yeah, of course.
The best they showed a montage of you know, like clips of him in the, you know, the video before they brought him on to accept the award. Melvyn Bragg gave him the award. And what the brilliant, I have to say, absolute brilliant masterstroke is that, you know, he had a cameo in Curb Your Enthusiasm. In the season, there's a season of Curb where Larry David creates a musical called Fatwa. Fatwa the musical,
oh,
based on Salman Rushdie. And actual Salman Rushdie appears in a cameo.
He's such a good
And so I thought that was a brilliant spot. And they showed that in the video. I thought that was a brilliant movie. Anyway, but the most exciting person then for me was the actor Leo Woodall. Do you remember him
from
The White Lotus?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And I bumped into him in the loo and I was like, oh, Leo Water. And I stopped myself and
said, didn't say that. Did
no,
you?
I didn't say that.
Oh, thank God.
I just said,
oh,
because
there is an unwritten rule of the gents that you don't just randomly introduce yourself.
And also, you don't go up to the person and say, then you're
no,
such as
such. But I was. But remember how much, like literally, how much nudity there was built Leo Water based nudity.
You guys were really bowled over by that. I thought it was.
She was saying it was an appropriate place to meet him with this.
I mean, it's not like we haven't seen him before.
Oh, that's how you recognize him. Yes, you wouldn't. If you'd just seen his face, you'd have been like, I don't know who this is, but you look down, you're like, oh, I know who you are. I recognise that.
Basically, that's what I was thinking. I've been watching. Have you finished your What Were You Watching segment?
I have, but I just quickly wanted to give a little shout out to Heather Wallace, one of our listeners, because she noted that I liked Fake Profile and then gave me another one to watch. So this is going to be next on my list.
Yeah.
Listeners might have already got on board with it, but Smiley, apparently.
Smiley.
Yeah.
It's a Netflix Spanish dramedy, she's called it, and she said it's like loads of couples at different stages of relationships in Barcelona over the Christmas period. Right up my street, guys. So yeah,
Smiley.
Yeah.
Oh,
interesting. Look with your own eyes.
Never heard of it.
Have you ever watched Elite?
No, and you always tell me
you've got to watch Elite. Elite is fucking proper, as you'd call it, cuckoo Cuckoo Bong.
Yeah.
Cuckoo Bong?
Yeah, that's another one of
her. Yeah, it's crazy.
Cuckoo Bong.
Yeah. So we've got banana crackers and Cuckoo Bong. These are the two big.
Can I just say, Boyd's saying it like as in your phrases. He will use them off-pod to me. So,
but they're definitely your creation. You should be proud.
So is it an amalgamation of Cuckoo and Bonkers?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
But Bong, not Bonk.
Oh, right, okay.
Not that would sound weird.
Bonk, which would sound weird. Inappropriate. Yeah, okay, got it.
Don't be a knob, James.
I mean, that's the premise of this podcast. So yeah,
a bit late now. I have been watching. This is another one that we will be reviewing. But although having said that, because sometimes because it's the second season, who knows if we will.
Who knows?
But The Bear.
Oh, yes.
The Bear will cover
it. Wrote about The Bear for Heat.
Spoiler, we will almost certainly be reviewing The Bear, but I'm pretty sure we're going to be doing a kind of another one of those sponsored podcasts for The Bear as well.
Oh, so, are we? Yeah. Okay, exciting. Fully deserving of all the. I mean, as a whole, I'm not reviewing the new season, by the way, because it's heavily embargoed.
It's heavily embargoed. It's literally aired in the States. So there's part of me that's just like, I don't think it is embargoed because it's already out there and I've got very little time for that.
Yeah, that's true. But there is an embargo. There is an embargo.
You can't have a UK embargo.
It's not a thing. Well, they are. Right. I'll ask you, is it a spoiler to talk about one of the guest star cameos in it?
Is it on the interwebs?
Yeah, it's totally in the interwebs.
Oh, then fuck it. Just do it. Okay. I'm going to say
this is nothing to do with me. Boyd is about to drop a cameo for the season two. I'm completely washing my hands of it, Pontius Pilate style.
Oh.
But if you don't want to hear it, maybe skip forward 10 seconds.
Yeah. There's loads of cameos, by the way, which I'm not going to mention. Like, really exciting, interesting. But it's almost more than a cameo. Will Poulter, basically, is in an episode.
Yeah, Will Poulter.
Where one of the staff is sent to Copenhagen to learn cooking under him, particularly a patisserie, patisserie cooking.
Baking,
whatever. Which is, of course, topical for our bake-off.
Indeed.
If only I had a Will Poulter to go
if
to.
If only
oh my
you
God,
did.
If I only had Poulter.
Maybe we should try and get Will Poulter on.
Yeah, that's another guy.
Hey, look, okay, we're not letting you get your tread away, so just calm down.
Yeah, I've interviewed Poulter a couple of times, so we could try and get him. Anyway, he is so brilliant in this episode. Just because you kind of expect him to be, because the whole tenor of The Bear is that, you know, that the stresses and strains of cooking
that level. Stressful.
Yeah, but that's the whole point of it. But he is an ocean of calm, and he's like really, really not what you're expecting is going to happen at all. And he's so fantastic in it, like a really soulful performance.
I can imagine he's like that in real life.
Yeah, I think he is, yeah. Anyway, so that's my slight spoiler of mention. I'm not going to mention anything else about it because we will hopefully review it properly when the embargo is up on this very podcast.
What I was going to say is one of the things I've been watching is The Bear. Because I have not been watching season 2, but I never finished season 1. I there were 3 episodes left, and I was like, you know what? Season 2's coming up. We're going to have to watch it. So I want to finish season 1. And I think what put me off? I remember seeing that the last episode was a double episode. So it was 3 episodes, but it was actually 4 episodes. But really great. And the penultimate episode, like the whole season was stressful. The penultimate episode review was one of the most stressful times I've had watching television.
Oh,
that particular episode builds to a crescendo of stress where they're all having absolute meltdowns.
Yeah.
And I was so anxious watching it.
Yeah. I was going to stop talking about this series, but yeah, I won't. Yeah. Let's just say that.
there will be a time when
consistent breakdowns
I think it's safe to say it's still stressful.
Yes, I'm sure it is.
Ongoing stress.
But I'm looking forward to season 2 of The Bear.
The other thing I was going to say about the music is so brilliant. The first song in this new season is a song by Bruce Hornsby in The Range of The Way It Is fame. You recognise that song?
Can you
piano.
Sing it for me,
do you remember
please?
The Way It Is?
No,
piano,
no.
I've kind of almost sang it there, yeah. Anyway, there's a song by them that it's a brilliant opening to the whole thing. And there's just the whole needle drops are brilliant. Squeeze is in it, R.E.M. Love a bit of Squeeze, exactly. Anyway, so I'd spend a lot of time watching episodes of The Bear that they sent us. I also finished The Idol. Yes.
Right. So we need to discuss it because you sort of started talking to me about it and then you stopped.
Yeah.
So you want to save it for this.
I haven't seen the finale of The Idol, but I know what happens in it. Now, I will say, no one listening to this, I suspect anyone who wishes to watch The Idol finale has already watched it, and most of the rest of you
don't
care.
Are we
going to
get complaints?
So I'm not going to spoil it. You're not going to spoil it?
No,
I thought you were about to go into talking
talk
about the finale.
It.
Oh, fine.
No,
then there's no spoilers to
there's
worry
a
about.
Twist. There's a big
yes,
twist.
And which I'm everyone has read about.
Yeah, I'm not going to specify what it is. It makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Is it because they've cut an episode out? Is that what happened?
No, I don't think so. What is weird about it, right? The whole show is very strangely paced as a series. It's only 5 episodes, right? And you think, oh, so they're going to have to kind of pack a lot into densely packed. But then the last episode is like, it spends hours, I mean, not literally, but it feels like hours on this, like, that all of these acts that the main character, Jocelyn, and the Weeknd's character, they all kind of like foster these young people who are all part of his kind of quasi cult. They all perform to like her entourage, like the record company boss and her manager. And what, and it goes
literally
on for a long time. It's literally like an episode of The X Factor or something. Yeah. they literally perform full length songs, right? Mm. And I'm like, you've built that into, I mean, the final episode is longer than an hour. It's probably 75 minutes
it's
or whatever.
Pop-eyed.
But it doesn't, yeah, it's literally pop-eyed. But it doesn't feel like they've like packed huge amount of story in. It's really weirdly paced. But I mean, it is a gigantically flawed show. But there is a remnant of, what's fascinating to me is, so you know they filmed the whole thing, I think this is pretty much what happened before, what's his name, the director took over directorial duties, Sam Levinson. And they scrapped what would have been filmed, this is the story of it, and he took over, and they just literally refilmed the story and the Weeknd's, his...
More of a male gaze they wanted.
More, that's right.
Well, that's how it's been reported, but even forgetting that issue, like, it's been completely changed more towards what the Weeknd, Abel Tesfaye, as his real name is, wanted, his kind of, his version of what the story is. But I really want to see what they originally shot, because there's the remnant, you can sense in the show, of a really funny... kind of almost like comedy take on superstardom or pop superstardom, because all of her entourage are brilliant. Like
Dan Levy.
Dan Levy does not come back. That's weird. Like he only appears for about a minute in episode one.
I think sense prevailed.
I don't know. That's an interesting story in itself. God knows what happened to his character. But I mean, Divine Joy Randolph plays Destiny, her co-manager. She is phenomenal. She's brilliant in it. And she kind of manages along with Hank Azaria as Haim. And together they're really, really funny. The record company boss is fantastic as well. And it's just like everything, their reactions to things, but there's lots of up-to-date pop culture references, particularly in this final episode, are really funny and entertaining. And you kind of believe them, because I've met those people like that, publicists and pop managers and people who deal with celebrity superstars. And I thought it was all really well observed and really funny. But they seem to have, that then you've got imposed on it this completely like very self-consciously serious, you know, thing about how she's being exploited by the Weeknd's character and how he is this dark, kind of scary, quasi cult leading figure. He does end up being, slight spoiler alert, pathetic. He himself, I read an interview with him where he said, what people don't realize, when you see the whole series, you'll realize, because people complained at the beginning, why should we, you know, it's a ridiculous figure. Why should she fall in love with him? He's, you know, it's a very egotistical thing for him to, like, you know, be able to seduce this young woman. Mm. And he, in interviews early on, said, I think when he was in Cannes, he said, you've got to watch the whole thing because actually his character ends up being a pathetic loser. And he does. To be fair, and that is true.
Well, so that's even more attractive to her.
Well, no, I'm not going to spoil the whole thing, but you know,
they trauma bomb probably.
There's a lot of table turning and you know power dynamics and that. It's not just as simple as he has the power over. Put it that way, very, very much not that. Anyway, long story short, I want to see the original version, which I'm guessing, I have absolutely no evidence for this, but it's like a funnier, you know, look at the whole phenomenon. And I think the whole kind of like, is this a cult thing? He's a cult leader, which is a bit half-assed anyway in the way it's depicted. That does detract from what it could have been, I think. But there's enough in there. There's enough morsels in there. And I'm assuming they will recommission it for a second season.
Oh, please,
I think I think they possibly will. I think it's done pretty well in terms of like ratings. It's done terribly in terms of critics' reviews, obviously, and reception. But I think HBO will be very much tempted to do another series, because it's a big... They want talked about TV, and it has absolutely been one of the most talked about series of this year, whether you like it or not. And for all its flaws and, you know, blah, 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 it is... And doing another series will make it even more talked about. So we'll see what happens.
Didn't you sense that mashup though? Because I only watched the first episode, where it started off like the first 20 minutes, you're like, oh my God, this is brilliant. This is a real like skewering, you know. Like,
completely, yeah. But and there's enough of that all the way through the series. There's all the way through there are scenes like that.
Yeah.
Like there's a scene in the finale when they're, I don't know how they're filmed, it looks so lavish, like filmed in the, she's about to do her comeback stadium concert at a massive stadium. And they're her gang are sitting there kind of gossiping and chatting about it, and it's just really funny and interesting. Anyway, yeah, that's pretty much what I've been watching.
Okay. When you did your little musical bit, you know, when you sang something to
Bruce Hornsby in the Range,
yeah. All I heard, do it again. How's it going?
Da-da-ding, da-da-ding, da-da-ding.
See that's all I hear when you say that is da-da-ding, da-da-ding, da-da-ding. All I hear is the music to Warrior, Jonathan Tropper's show Warrior. That is what I hear, which coincidentally is what I've been watching this week. So it doesn't come out here for a little while yet, but it's dropped. So, well, it hasn't dropped in the States. The first three episodes, I think, are out in the States as we record this. I think four by the time we go out. But I have been given some episodes in advance, which is very exciting.
What channel is it on?
It is formerly of Cinemax, now just of Max.
No, but I mean here in the UK.
Oh, here'll be Sky. HBO have given me episodes in advance of what may or may not be an interview with the
well, obviously May.
With the showrunner, who, lest we forget, was also the showrunner of Banshee. And C in the
Does he
series.
Know that we named a segment after Banshee?
He will know when I speak to him.
Oh, fantastic.
I'm gonna bring it
exciting.
Up.
Yeah, brilliant. Do you be slightly offended by the fact that we're saying that his show is obscure and not many people heard of it?
I think that's fair, certainly in the UK, because it was a cinema show.
I would say it's not fair.
I think it's regarded as a cult show. It wasn't like a runaway.
Okay. Yeah,
following, which was largely me. Mm. But no, it's great. So I'm looking forward to that. So yeah, I've been watching a lot of Warrior. And bear in mind, Warrior was Cinemax's last ever original show.
Wow.
And then Cinemax closed. So there was a sense that Warrior was never coming back. We thought it was finished. But no, it has been resurrected. And it's, again, one of the most violent shows on television. And it is glorious.
I remember how violent it was, yeah.
Yeah, because it ended with
limbs cut off.
Yeah,
and
there was a big old fight in Chinatown at the end of season two. And it was mad. So yeah.
Something for Kay to look forward to.
Yeah, exactly.
Can't wait. Counting
down the days. Tong Wars. 19th century Tong Wars in San Francisco. Loads of fun. So yes, I've watched a lot of that. I've watched, as we've said, The Bear. I've watched more Foundation. Now, we can't review. I see everyone now listening is, all I can do is apologize that we cannot review the most elite of sci-fi shows, Foundation, on this week's podcast because it's embargoed.
I got in trouble. I got a rap on the knuckles for Foundation. I included we previewed Foundation in last week's current issue of He Magazine.
Oh,
and I accidentally left on a star rating to which people, you might think we've actually seen it, but no point in the actual preview.
Did you have to explain to them your ridiculous star-based preview system?
I did, yeah. I said, no, I apologize and said I should have taken off the star rating.
But hang on, but you can't surely take the star rating off one thing.
No, we do. I do it quite a lot. If something is specifically embargoed like that, that we still want to preview,
right?
I put preview on it and don't have a star rating.
It's almost like having star ratings on previews makes no sense.
Shut the fuck up. How dare you?
Yeah.
Talking of star ratings, this is from the man who works for a magazine that's given Indiana Jones and
here
the mediocre Thingy of Watson four stars and has only given Mission Impossible the Thingy of Watson four stars as well, as if it's the same star rating, whereas Mission Impossible is a work of genius in comparison.
James is a massive doofus.
So, yeah.
I had no responsibility for either of those ratings.
I have to take it.
As the face of Empire on this podcast.
Yeah, the face of Empire.
I have to eat it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Except Boyd is literally the face of the preview star rating because he's the one who puts them in the magazine.
Yeah, all right.
Let's not fall out. Come on.
Okay, so Foundation. Back to Foundation.
Foundation.
I've been watching a lot of Foundation, which we'll be reviewing on this week's Pilot Plus. Kay is going to watch Foundation from the start.
No, see, the thing is, guys, I'm actually up a mountain.
Yeah. She is.
Up a mountain without paddle.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm up a mountain without Wi-Fi and things. So I don't know if that's going to be possible.
Oh,
I'll
don't
try
worry.
My
okay.
best.
When are you back?
I'm back late on Sunday.
I'll just sort out your schedule for you and it's fine.
Yeah,
late
Sunday,
Monday morning, first thing, wake up, crack Foundation, crank
it
up.
That's it.
On the Apple.
Listen, guys, the Ark.
The Ark. Oh, yeah, the Ark. No, it's not like the Ark, to be fair.
I can't do any more.
No. It's nothing like the Ark.
You burnt your bridges with me, James.
I would say the budget for the first scene of Foundation is equivalent to the entire budget of the show, The Ark. And I'm including the second season in that.
But budget's one thing, but what about the storytelling and actual content?
It's surprisingly good. Also, you get to see a lot of Lee Pace in a loincloth. In fact, the first episode of the second season, he has a naked fight with someone.
All right,
tackle out and everything. You'd love it. It'd be just like Fake Profile, but it's just Lee Pace oiled up and naked, beating the shit out of
Well, like in Women in Love, the Ken Russell film, when Alan Bates and Oliver Reed naked wrestle.
Yeah, bit naked wrestling. It's all good.
Right,
who did he wrestle?
Who did he wrestle in this?
Yeah.
An assassin.
Oh, okay.
An assassin has come to kill him. But
they
have
a sword fight. Okay,
they do have a sword fight. That's absolutely true. Swords all over the place. It's great.
I'm actually looking forward to seeing Foundation Season 2. Although I have to admit that I did not finish Season 1. So like you with The Bear, I'm going to have to catch up.
You will have to catch up.
We've given
listeners, just to pull back the curtain, we've given Kay two options. We've given Kay the option of jumping straight into Season 2 for the aforementioned naked wrestling, which you will enjoy.
I'm just going to do that.
Or we've said, actually, why don't you not watch that and just watch the first episode of season one, just that one, so that you can have an understanding of what the show is. But you don't have to watch two episodes. You just
even
pick
I
that
remember
one.
That suggestion.
So you can just watch the very first one. No, you don't have to watch both. No. Just watch one, because what I thought we could do is Boyd and I can then discuss season two, but you can then just talk about your experience of just getting into the show.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Mm. Yeah, I think you might enjoy that more, because it's not the most accessible if you haven't watched the first season, I would say.
All right, I commit to doing that.
Okay, good. Well, we'll be talking about that on this week's Pilot Plus. Look forward to it, except for the one guy who complained about Elite Sci-Fi, who will probably skip it. Anyway, what else have I been watching? The only other thing I have been watching, which is the third episode of Secret Invasion. As we record, ridiculously early this week, Kay's fault, it went out this morning. And boy, do you remember when we watched the first Secret Invasion, the first episode, which we viewed on this podcast? And I didn't mention this on the show, but afterwards I texted you and said, I forgot to mention on the show, but did anyone else think Kingsley Benadire was inexplicably Welsh?
Oh yeah, you did.
And you were like, no, it's just you. Yet it turns out he is deliberately being Welsh. He has adopted a specific Welsh accent for this role. So I can work it out. I was like, well, first of all, like, what was he? Is he Northern English? What's he trying to be? Is he Irish? I thought, there's a hint of Welsh in there. Is it Welsh? And I landed on Welsh. Chris didn't believe me. You didn't believe me. But apparently, Kingsley Benadire has specifically said he decided to use a Welsh accent. He said there's a mixed race community in Bute Town, and I just thought that might be a nice way in. So it is a Bute Town accent.
Wow. Mm.
So there you
is
go.
He part Welsh himself, though? I'm just looking up his.
I don't know that he is.
No, he's born in Gospel Oak.
Yeah. Which
is an accent. He's
very much
chosen,
not Welsh.
He's plucked an accent.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, he's Jewish, by the way, which is really
I did not know that.
Yeah. Oh, that's what an interesting.
Yeah. Obviously, Toes, this would be an interesting. Well, I'm not from Bute Town, so I guess I can't say, but I identified it as Welsh, so I'm saying that's
a
success.
Good sign. Yeah.
So there you go. I'm not going mad, and I have been watching Secret Invasion. Okay. That's what we've been watching, I think, in total. I have not shared a question with you this week, principally because we have not had time this week, and I didn't want to spring one on you. So I thought we'd just dabble into the postbag a little bit. So last week's Pilot Plus was a very, very busy one. We did not have time to open the postbag, so I thought we could do a little
too much bickering over the list.
Yeah, exactly. It's a little bit of postbag action here as well. Mm-hmm. So let's begin with this one, which comes to us from Stephen. And Stephen says, quick question for the Pilot Pod. Do you feel the need to watch things as soon as they drop on streaming services so that the algorithm knows it's a successful show and it doesn't get immediately cancelled? It feels like if I don't watch a show immediately, it will get cancelled after one season. There will be no point watching it.
We can't live like that, can we? I mean, I don't do that.
No, but there's a good question point here, because you've suddenly got me wondering whether, because we get sent stuff in advance with our own, like, you know, forthcoming.
It's not counting towards.
Yeah, I wonder if that doesn't count
you're
towards
have to
the
play
algorithm.
It in the background.
No, it won't do.
So that's, you know, our support for Lockwood & Co., for example, wouldn't count it because we got them in advance, screenings in advance. That's annoying.
And, you know, and even though I watch my favourite shows thousands of times, it doesn't go towards anything.
Oh, that's infuriating.
But also, it's difficult for us. So Netflix, we do watch them in the actual Netflix app.
Yeah.
But you're right, it wouldn't count them because they're pre-release.
No, yeah.
And then a lot of the other things we watch on a separate screening site, so that wouldn't count either. So for us, we are algorithm
free. We're single-handedly destroying our favourite shows.
Yeah, exactly. It's entirely our fault.
Oh God. Steve,
but for the average person, like, watching stuff, I imagine there, because there isn't, people have talked about that, haven't they? That it's not just about consistent watching, it's about when it opens, when it drops, like it's that spike they want at the beginning to see people binging it. But then conversely, that does mean that it tails off early because everyone watches it at the beginning. So I'm never sure which one to go with.
I think they much prefer if something immediately catches people's attention and they watch it and they binge it as soon as it arrives, that is the ultimate. That's what they want. That's what Netflix wants. I think, because you remember how long it took them. Do you remember your favourite one that I didn't like initially? You know, the geeky sci-fi
fantasy.
You know, Neil Gaiman.
Oh, Sandman.
That one. Sandman. Do you remember it took a long time for them to confirm they're renewing that show? Because it wasn't an immediate hit.
No.
It did not immediately go to number one or two in the Netflix
people
chart.
Like you didn't understand it.
Exactly. After a couple of weeks, it did. It's my memory of it. I'm sure people will correct me on the exact details. But whereas if something goes right straight in the top 10 with a bullet, go particularly number one or two, then they're like, oh yeah, we'll definitely recommission this. Because they know instantly that people are attracted to the idea of it and you know, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that is preferable, definitely.
But
don't wait around. Don't wait on it.
But who has the time on the day of release to be immediately? I mean, it's a lot, isn't it?
Of course, yeah, it's a lot, yeah. But just, you know,
make
some forward planning. Like, I've planned for you to watch Foundation on Monday morning when you go back from your mountaineering.
Boyd's now offering a new service where he'll organise your life to fit in all the TV you need to watch in order for them not to be cancelled.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, what's they called, those people, like a life coach?
Yeah. Oh my
You're a TV
God.
Coach.
Yeah, I could start my own.
That is a good side hustle.
Yeah,
I could
this see, is.
Yeah, that, and
think,
it is.
I think we should get a slice of the pie for
there are loads of things. That's what, in that cult, that documentary about that dodgy British cult, they all call themselves life coaches and they charge people tens of thousands of pounds just to talk bullshit to them.
Do you know
I could
what?
Do that.
If someone wants to give me tens of thousands of pounds, I will 100% like program
it. It's my idea first.
No offense.
I had it first.
No offense. No one's coming to you, James.
We could form a company.
We could.
Yeah, let's form a company.
Yeah, let's do that.
Where we do life coach people through their TV choices.
All right, I'm here for the frothy slash period drama slash
yeah.
you know,
and
comedy.
I actually think that James would make a good messianic leader of a cult.
Of course he would.
You think I'd be a good cult leader?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Look at his eyes light.
Yeah. See, exactly. He's got excited already.
I'm quite excited about this.
Yeah. I can work with him. Fans as well.
Yeah,
that's it. The
diehards. Direwolves, pick one. It's all good. Oh, it's good, it's good.
Right, well, we've got our plan B sorted out.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's good. When they come for this podcast, is what we'll do. We'll branch out into a curated televisual housekeeping service. Well, we will. You tell us exactly how much free time you've got, and we will program your week for you from
we'll
a TV
need to,
point
off
of view.
Air. We'll need to think of a name for this app, and then get We'll have to copyright it. All right.
Let's do that. All right. Side hustle sorted. Excellent work. Should we find another question? Oh, here's a question. And this is a legitimate question that Boyd, no pressure, you're going to need to answer. This comes from Mira. And Mira says, question for the bod. I was enjoying finally watching Barry and have just finished season 3, only to find season 4 has disappeared completely from Sky.
Who's this from again?
Mira. It's from Mira.
Yeah, she actually DM'd me this question as well. And I'm glad you've done it because I was going to answer her. So yeah, carry on.
Okay. I did some looking into it and it looks like it's something to do with the deal / license they have with HBO. But do you have any more information about this? Will it be back? Do you know of any other examples of this sort of thing happening? It's so frustrating.
Yes. This is pretty much happens all the time with HBO shows on Sky. So, yeah, what happened? The most recent season of a show that they have the rights to often disappears pretty quickly, so that they can then bring it out as a paid-for thing. So they'll put it up as like a digital download, or even on DVD sometimes, or Blu-ray. So, for example, The Last of Us is coming out on home video on DVD and Blu-ray this very week, I think. And I guarantee you, they would have taken it off Sky.
So that people will pay for it.
Yeah, it will come back though. They do invariably come back after a while. It might take, you know, quite a long time. But shows like they do it with Curb a lot. So as soon as the new season of Curb arrives, you watch it in full for 10 weeks. Then it disappears quite quickly. Then you have to pay for it to watch it, and then it comes back about 6 months later, and the whole thing's there again. So it is a bit annoying, but that is the way it works.
So you need to have saved it to your Sky Q box in advance.
You do need to save. That's a good, very good point. You need to save it, otherwise it will disappear. Exactly. Make sure it's not going to be deleted. I think they did it with Succession. Like Succession, they trumpeted. They're like, oh, you can watch the whole of Succession still up until about a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. Then Succession came out on DVD, and it's like,
you can't.
Yeah, no, you can't. So
I did not know this.
Yeah.
These kind of tips and tricks will be available on our app, just so you know.
Yeah, that's the life coaching. Yeah, the life coaching.
The side hustle, completely.
If anyone has any ideas for the name of our life coaching service, do feel free to send them in at Pilot TV Pod on Instagram or Twitter for now, and possibly Threads as of tomorrow.
Yes.
Like I say, we're recording this on Wednesday, so by the time this goes out, Threads would have been in the world for a few days. This is the Meta Facebook people's Twitter alternative.
Yeah, where you can read 600 tweets from James if you want on the new ways on Twitter. You can't anymore. You 100 get to 600 tweet. That's it.
That's right.
If you want to read James's 601st tweet, you can't.
I think if you do want to do that, you've got to look at your life.
Well, maybe.
Get on board with our app.
Maybe. That's fair. That is fair. Speaking of HBO weird things, and this is kind of a little bit of preview of news, but have you seen that like Insecure, 6 Feet Under, Band of Brothers are all coming to Netflix? Because HBO has been licensing their shows.
Yes.
And obviously this is a kind of a stance that they've taken whereby they're not interested in exclusivity. Like they're happy to just want the Benjamins. They're all about the cash.
Yeah, completely.
They'll sell whatever you like.
Yeah.
Smart move.
I think they also do with Channel 4 as well, isn't there? I think.
Oh, quite possibly. I think they're happy to sell their stuff, whatever. Yeah. They don't need everything to just be on Max.
No. I mean, I think that's preferable. At least it's preferable than to being removed from it. I'd rather something was on more than one.
Yes, than. No, I'm all for it. Yeah. I have it everywhere. But just don't delete it.
No.
Have we got one for you, Boydie? This comes from Mark. And Mark says, quick one for the postbag. Has anyone else commented that Boyd's use of famously has doubled since it was brought up?
Oh, yeah. That's deliberate, though.
Every time he says it on recent shows, it's now followed by Boyd repeating it and having a little chuckle to himself.
Oh, God.
That's so sweet.
Anyway, self-conscious.
Keep up your famously, brackets, famously, chuckle. Oh. Good work. I'm very much looking forward to Pilot 250.
He's actually taken his glasses off to rub his eyes.
I'm never saying famously or famously ever again.
With or without the little chuckle.
This is my
vow. Never change, Boydo. We love you.
I hate the little chuckle, though.
Oh, no. I think the chuckle is great. And yeah, if you want to hear the little chuckle live, book your tickets to Pilot 250, kingsplace.co.uk/Pilot250, 19th of August, Saturday night. Be there with me, with Boyd, with Kay, with whoever else we drag along. We'll even give you cake. What more do you want?
Well, no. Remember, health and safety. We're not sure.
Do you know what? I'm throwing health and safety to the wind. Oh, I'm going to force feed cake to everyone in the front row.
First aid trainer, but I mean, like,
yeah.
A bit worried about that. Can I just quickly, on that note, say a thank you to Jenny S. Wilkie, who on Twitter has sent me biscuits that are amazing and fairly foolproof, right, she said. And
a recipe, you mean?
Yeah, she gave me a recipe because she said you should try and make them, or I'll make them and you can pass them off as your own. I think there's a lot of concern about my baking. And I think that's very
sweet. There's some concern that you're going to cheat and this and you're going to let this person cook bake for you.
I said to Jenny that I would do it, but I just think that's the second recipe I've been offered now. So we'll see what I make on the day.
Someone offered me a recipe for an apple cake as a family recipe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I like an apple cake.
Yeah. I love apples.
It required cooking apples, though, and that feels like more hassle and more effort than I'm prepared to put into it.
What do you mean? But, no, you just buy them. You're going to have to buy normal apples. You just literally go to the next part of the
You don't have to go scrumping
And
for
also,
them.
By the way, you could use normal apples.
Can you?
Yeah.
No, honestly. No, don't listen to him. Use cooking apples.
I mean, cooking apples might be slightly preferable.
No, I'm not throwing shade at the family apple cake recipe.
Sounds like
but
it.
Apple cake isn't my favourite type of cake.
Yeah, but you've got to think about the people you're cooking, baking
for. Oh, fuck them.
For,
no, right? Absolutely not.
So me and Boyd love apples. And then if you could just rustle up some custard on the side, that would be
good. Well, I feel then you're just in crumble territory, right? If you're going to have custard and an apple cake, have an apple crumble.
I do prefer a crumble to a cake, I have to say. Yeah.
But then if we're going to go crumble, first of all, absolutely fine, apple crumble, good. But you put a sultana in there, I will burn you alive.
Oh, no.
And second of all, absolutely.
What's your problem with sultanas?
It just ruins a perfectly good apple crumble.
Do you not like sultanas in general?
See, I like grape. I like raisins,
right?
But I don't like currants or sultanas.
Oh my God, you like raisins, but not currants. What's the difference?
They taste different. Now, I don't know the difference.
I've never heard this.
Perhaps there is some kind of grape expert listening to this who can tell me. I don't know the difference between a raisin, a grape, or sultana in terms of the production process. I assume they come from different types of grape. But
you know what we need?
They
we
do.
Need our lovely listener who sent us the wine. To get in touch.
To tell us. Yes Paul the wine
know.
Guy.
Yeah, but
Paul the wine guy will
I've
know.
Never heard of anyone liking a raisin, not a sultana.
No,
that
they
is
have,
extraordinary.
No, so sultanas have a kind of a sharp, pungent taste, whereas raisins are quite innocuous.
Pungent's the wrong word, I think.
Well, they're upsetting.
That is mad.
So if I say they will ruin a crumble. I
agree with you that crumble doesn't need an apple crumble.
Cinnamon,
does not,
fine.
Yeah, cinnamon's fine.
You know what's even better is an apple and blackberry crumble.
Well, this is what I was going to say. Apple and blackberry trumps apple.
Yes.
And frankly, like a winter fruit/summer fruits one trumps that.
Oh,
like,
I'm in agreement with James on this one. I mean, the sultana thing is perverse.
No, that's
fine. Sick.
There is nothing that isn't improved by the introduction of red.
You know
what?
One of the most irritating things about prêt à manger, which you know, like most people,
we sound like such media
of a morning. Well, only media because prêt à manger. I think normal people are talking about.
Just because like they always surround our buildings and we're always
anyway. There's a prêt about like 2 minutes walk from our office, and so I invariably pop into prêt, get one of those pots. With yogurt and like have, you know, five berry.
Yeah, they cost about
thing.
£8. Yes, I
know. £8. It's not that expensive.
Boyd's so bougie.
But
like
here's my problem with it. The variance of the number of raisins/sultanas or whatever in them, it's unbelievable. One day you might get like 2 raisins in it if you're lucky. The next it'll be 7, 8, 10, 12, 15
raisins.
I want more as many raisins as possible.
This is in the granola bits.
Yeah.
That you
in the
drop
granola
in.
Bits, yeah. It's mad. You've got to have a consistent number of raisins in your pot, yogurt pot.
I think you need to send a little note to prep.
I'm tempted. Seriously.
You should. Because, you know, like from listening to the Wolf and Owl podcast, Tom Davies often sends messages to retailers.
There was one time where I had no raisins at all. And I was like, is there an actual raisin shortage or something? Because it was mad.
Yeah,
I was
like, let's stick a currant in there instead. And then you were fucked.
I mean, frankly, any currant, raisin, what's the other one? Would have been
sultana.
Fine. Sultana. I'm open to all of those, but there were none of any of those things in it. And it was a disgrace.
Furious. Were you in a bad mood that day?
Oh, God, yeah. Absolutely furious.
Gosh, and I would have got the backlash.
That's right.
So please just stick more raisins and sultanas in his food.
Maybe I might. But I do agree with you about the crumble thing. Yeah. Maybe I'll do a crumble for the show.
That could get messy.
Cheating?
Yeah, yeah. I think we should stick to cakes for this particular challenge.
What's the baking? Did you just like stew some apples and then shove some biscuity stuff on top?
I imagine a decent crumble is quite hard to pull off.
Do you know what? It's actually quite easy.
Is it?
Yeah. Crumble. I've genuinely made a crumble before, a couple of crumbles, and they are one of the easiest desserts to pull off. Yeah.
No, I think you've got to do something.
But this is not about easy or difficult. It's like art. You know, you don't judge a work of art by how easy or difficult it is.
Hang on. If you're going to start telling me that your crumble is high art, then no. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to leave.
You won't be the judge of that.
Cray Bakes are going to judge the cakes.
A blind true. Test. And actually, we should be announcing what we're doing because I want to do a blind test.
Oh, no, I'm just talking about, you know, possibilities, the options.
Fine, yeah, I have yet to decide on what my cake will be. We shall see.
God knows. I'm not even thinking about
it. We really need to get a good guest for this show, don't we? This is going to be the crux of it.
Well, you know what? Paul Hollywood kind of steps in.
I feel like it needs to be someone like that at this stage. Anyway, book your tickets now, please, for the 250th live show. As you can hear, it's going to be unmissable. So please come or I'll be sad. Anyway, I think that is it for the postbag. Let us move on now to this week's interview, which I hope we have. Full disclosure, we were supposed to do two interviews for this week's show. One of them was going to be with not one, not two, but three members of the Witcher cast. And the other one was going to be Tiffany Haddish from The After Party. Now, Tiffany Haddish's plane, unfortunately, got delayed and that got cancelled. And the Witcher interviews have not happened at the time of recording. So we may not have them. So this may not be here at all. But if it is here, I will say that just for Kay, because I know how devastated she was, she wasn't able to watch The Witcher last week. So in large part to make up for that, we have not one, but possibly two. I don't know. We have some Witcher guests. At this
You're
point,
so
I genuinely
annoying.
Don't know who they are.
You're so annoying.
Thank you. Thank
you.
You
interrupted him to say that.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. Thank you for the drop in. So I'm hoping there is an interview now with Anya Shalhotra. There could be an interview with Anya Shalhotra and Freya Allen. Frankly, it's anyone's guess, but let's see. So if you're lucky, Kate, if you're lucky, Yennefer of Vengerberg and Princess Cirilla of Sintra will be on this podcast right now to address all of your Witcher needs, to answer all of your Witcher questions. So if this interview goes ahead, this is Helen O'Hara, probably, talking to someone from The Witcher, which is available now on Netflix.
Well, hello and welcome to the Pilot TV podcast to Anya Shalhotra and Freya Allen. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Yeah, I'm delighted to be here with you. I was just saying it's very strange to see you in normal person clothes, normal person surroundings. I can't see a single dragon behind either of you as we're speaking today. It's bizarre.
I know. I just checked.
Yes, let the record show that Anya did turn around to check there wasn't a dragon behind her as she said that. Yes. So I mean, season three, this has been just a phenomenal journey so far. I was talking to one of my colleagues the other day who said it's so weird that it's gone from, you know, kind of being Dragon Dunkirk. You know, you've got this big military battle, you've got time hopping stuff, you've got this really complicated mythology in season one, and yet it absolutely captured everyone's imagination and became this massive global phenomenon. So why is it? Why did people sort of snatch onto this show quite as tightly as everybody has? You know, because it is a complicated mythology. It is a very kind of a difficult world to get your head around at first, and it's just taken off and run.
That firstly, the books had a massive play in that, and then secondly, the games that were made from the books had a massive, you know, like there was already a massive fan base established before we even did anything. So I think that definitely was a kind of helping hand in a way.
So basically there was somebody in every household who could explain what was happening to somebody else.
Probably, yeah. I mean, I need it explaining to me and I'm in it. Like when I'm sat watching the family, I literally have to ask my boyfriend, like, what is actually happening? Because I don't know what's happening.
Yeah, I think it is to do with the fans. I mean, 30 million fans, like, that figure comes into mind when I remember starting the whole process and that's what people said to me. And just having that support system there, people who were, you know, rooting for us. helps a lot.
It was a relief for me, to be honest, when the time jumping calmed down, just because it made it much easier to follow. But also by that point, you're so invested in these characters. I mean, and I think Ciri and Yennefer particularly, I think, are the ones that we invest in, because we've seen they've been through so much. I mean, in some ways, you know, Geralt is a big, strong guy. We expect him to be okay in the world. But both of these women, for very different reasons, had to really fight, you know, to get ahead, it feels like.
I mean, every character they've got there, you know, the world is, the continent is so threatening that every character faces either the monsters in themselves or, you know, some sort of fear along the way, some sort of monster along the way. So, yeah, whether it's to do with their own insecurities and fears and things they need to work on or an actual live monster. You know, every character's always got something to tackle.
Metaphorical and actual monsters to slay.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that because everyone's always talking about, oh, the monster's scary. And I'm like, never really necessarily feels like the scariest. Mm. I feel like what they've all got going on in their heads is the scariest.
I think losing people, honestly, is probably one of the
exactly,
most
yeah. Mm-hmm.
That might be why the start of this season felt very kind of refreshing and almost comforting, in that we have our three favourites together. I mean, yes, they're on the run and the entire continent is searching for them. Okay, fine. But they're actually physically together for the first time, it feels like, certainly for an extended length of time. So was that kind of nice to play, that you're not sort of hopping around quite as well? You're hopping around physically, but maybe not character-wise quite so much?
I quite like it, actually. Because there are so many storylines, so many subplots, and especially for my character, like, we've created quite a bit of her journey. So, you know, we get to explore more of her on screen. So, yeah, I quite enjoy settling and having a little bit more of a direction this season. I felt, you know, last season it was a bit lost. I know for you, Freya, it's... You're constantly there's so many things you're constantly, there's new faces and threats and kind of people you're having to deal with,
and it's been kind of constant training for you basically the last couple of seasons, and constant kind of growing and learning, I guess, Freya.
Yeah,
for your character, I should say, rather than you know.
Well, for me too. Okay. I mean, yeah, the whole show's been a I guess a drama school for me. I've learned everything on it. I mean, absolutely everything. You'd be surprised, like, this show really throws everything. I mean, obviously the acting side, like getting to work with all constant amazing actors, but then also just the random skills that you learn, like horse riding, stunts, fighting, did bug wrangling, like, you know, milking a cow. Like, I mean, it's just endless random skills.
This is amazing. You've got a second career as a milkmaid, if you know, if the acting ever dries up for a bit, you know, boom.
Exactly. Sign me up as a stunt person, actually, you know.
Yeah.
What's been the hardest kind of skill to learn for both of you?
Doing a TV series. I mean, the hours, the way we work, it's not always consecutive order. 8 months of like sustaining a character, I think that's been the most challenging thing.
No, I totally agree with what Anne said. I think that I went on to a job after this last season and everyone was like, this is so hard. Like, and obviously, like, everything's, I'm not saying it's not hard, but like, honestly, The Witcher is just a whole other battle. Literally, a whole other battle. Like, it's just not the same. Like, how the amount of time we have to do a scene, you know, and then the conditions we're often playing with at the same time, the scheduling change, like, all of it is just, it really sets us up to be able to go on to another job and be like, obviously nothing's ever easy, but just it feels like you have so much more time to kind of breathe and work through things than you do. Like The Witcher is just, yeah, you get used to a very fast paced kind of way of working on The Witcher, which is in some ways a good skill to learn, because then you can slow down for other things, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was reading a bunch of interviews with you guys and I heard about fight scenes involving green pool noodles. Can you tell me more?
Freya.
Oh, yeah. That's Henry's. Well, I mean, there's always noodles involved, isn't there? There's always noodles flying about. I think that was Henry's fight with the flesh. What is it called?
The flesh monster.
Flesh Monster?
Fleshy.
The one on the boat.
I don't even... emerging monsters now. But there's noodles everywhere, but there was noodles in Henry's fight with the fight, whatever it's called. The monster with the tons of girls.
I haven't worked with many noodles.
Oh.
Have you not? Yeah, but you're working with the air, aren't you, with your magic?
Yeah.
And how's that? Is it almost like dance steps, you know, to get your magic right?
Not really. I think I prefer working as I do than with a noodle.
So sometimes easier without noodles flapping around.
It's always easier without noodles.
But this, I'm learning a lot today, I feel like, about how what happens on The Witcher and how things work. I did want to ask about just like the kind of skills involved with the show. I mean, you know, the one thing that leapt to my mind as I was watching it is, who has the toughest wig? Is it Henry? Is it you guys? Wig.
I'd say because yours is back and off your face, and they're all quite tricky to do with. And I think because Henry's is kind of greased down, I'd say mine's a little bit more. It doesn't play with the camera very well. And I'm often told, like, you know, you're not in a L'Oreal advert, get your hair off your face so we can see it. But it's hard. I've got quite a small forehead. So like my wig comes down quite far. I blame that. I blame my forehead.
It's just a lot of hair you have on that wig.
Yeah, but
they had to come up with a little prick to pin it like to the side so that, like, and I can tell, like, I know just because I know, because I saw it happening, but like watching the scenes, I'm like, oh, it's pinned there. Like they were clearly getting irritated with the hair there.
So, like, yeah. Gunja, especially in episodes 4 and I think 3 and 4. Was just like, we have to, it was pinned most of those episodes because
even with me, it happened.
Couldn't stand it in my face.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And how about the costumes? I think you've talked in the past about, you know, they were corseted but have become a bit more comfortable since season one. Is that right?
Yeah, I think, you know, sometimes when it comes to costumes, it's quite important to just have, I think we've realised now how important it is to be comfortable. Mm. I certainly have.
The locations this season, they felt a bit different to me. I haven't actually had a chance to go and look at where everything was shot, but you're actually in occasionally warm climates, it looked like, and not just, you know, snow and rain and difficult circumstances halfway up a mountain. What was it different? Am I misreading that? Or was there a little bit more heat this time?
We work in extremes.
Croatia was so nice, but we were literally there for like 2 nights.
Yeah, I know.
Oh no.
I've got a picture of you, Freya, which I looked at the other day. Sat right next to, it was just like you sat on the beach. Like
I know.
Like you had a chair and you had an umbrella.
I was not happy. The whole start of the shoot, I was just not happy. So I just would go and like sit and stare at the...
I know, that's so funny. I look at that photo and so much floods back.
I know, and I had my umbrella because they wouldn't let me not have an umbrella.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I guess you can't have Siri with a tan. It would be wrong somehow.
Well, it happens.
It did happen. Post-Morocco.
She does have a tan. I won't lie. By the end of it, she's got a tan. She's been living it up in Morocco.
What was the biggest sort of, I guess, challenge for both of you with your characters this season? What felt like maybe the biggest step forward or the biggest, you know, sort of moment that you really wanted to nail for both of them?
Coming back from the betrayal at the end of season 2, I didn't know how we were going to do that, even with the time jump. I mean, a year's passed, but, you know, we had very limited scenes to do that. And I just didn't want it to be forced. You know, it's so important, this relationship in the books between Ciri and Yennefer. I think that was the most challenging aspect, but, you know, oddly, just didn't think about it too much working with Freya. Like, I think we both allowed ourselves to find that dynamic. We we're quite close, I suppose, you know, and in age too. So we couldn't think about that too much, and we had to just trust that we'd get there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was something that was I thought of as a challenge in my head quite a bit. But actually, when I'm doing it, I didn't think about it too much.
I don't even know how to begin with that one. There's always challenges, especially with our minds, as like we're all quite perfectionistic. So we like to leave a set trying to feel like we've, you know, got something good. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, it's just constant challenges, I'd say. Like every day is every day tends to feel challenging, I guess. Mm. Definitely quite a bit of pressure on myself for the episode 7 to kind of do that right, since it's such an iconic kind of moment in the books, and for Ciri's journey as well. It's such a prevalent kind of storyline, and I just knew that there was going to be a lot to tackle with in terms of emotionally, but also just, you know, the conditions and how that was going to work. And of course we had, you know, end up having bloody sandstorms that made us not be able to shoot in the night, and so we're sort of doing night scenes with the sun like beaming into our eyes, so we're sort of like, my main fear there was we're just all going to look like we're squinting in the night.
That sounds horrendous, actually. That sounds incredibly difficult. I mean, do you find yourselves then sometimes getting in your own head about these things, like you were kind of saying, Anya, or does, once you're there on set in costume with one another, does it sort of kind of fall away and sort of fall into place?
It depends on what the scene is. There are some scenes that I'm struggling with saying the words, or like, you know, maybe just not connecting to what's in front of me, the script. And that's when I'm like in my head on set. Otherwise, you know, it's kind of easy because you just have to play off someone else. And now I feel like I know Yennefer enough to just go with it and trust you. And so you haven't got time to overthink it. But it is when it comes down to certain
lines. I agree. Like if a scene already flows on the page, it tends to then allow you to kind of just like, you know, sink into it and then work with the other actor and kind of just focus on that. But if not, then you're sort of having to juggle a lot, I guess.
I have to ask, obviously, you know, Henry Cavill has announced that he's leaving after this season. I think that announcement came after the end of the season. So, you know, how did you find out? Was it a phone call? Was it an email? Like, how did that happen?
I got a phone call from Lauren. It was like quite late. I was on the other side of the planet. So, yeah. But I just remember being like, oh my God, what's going on? What's going on?
Yeah. I mean, it must just be tough because you've spent so much time together, I guess. And, you know, you were saying you're all perfectionists, and I feel like that's very much him included. So it's been a very, very set dynamic for these last three seasons, I guess.
Yeah, it's going to be weird, but I'm really excited for the next season with Liam. Henry's journey's come to an end with Geralt, so I'm really excited for him too. He chose that moment and he's done such good work. Yeah. It won't be the same, but it will be something different in the best way, I think.
I feel like he's got a good energy to take over. He seems like, I don't know, he seems like he has something similar to bring to it, Liam. And I think he's been in touch with you both, right, to wish you luck with this season. So he's obviously been out there watching, I guess.
Yeah, I think he's been reading a lot and in terms of the books and kind of getting his head around what's in store for him.
And I don't know if you can say without spoilers, but are there things that you're excited about going into next season? Are there things that you're, you know, are these characters that you still feel like there's a lot of meat to explore?
Oh yeah, there's so much depth Freya and I are always trying to find. So yeah, we'll see. It depends what situation our characters are in, how the writers kind of want to do this. Next part of each of our journey. I know for me, I should be turned into a figurine. So I don't know what's going to happen there. We'll see. I haven't read anything yet.
And you do read ahead the books, right?
I've read the books.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you not read anything, Anya?
No.
Oh, I've read Ep 1.
Ooh.
I haven't got my head around that. I've been sent it. I haven't read it yet. I've read parts. So okay. I've read bits, but I haven't read like a full.
Obviously, I mean, for your character, it's different, isn't it? But for Ciri, it's pretty much should be quite like, I mean, you kind of know from the books. I haven't read that book yet, but I know what's coming. Vaguely.
Yeah, I'm dead excited for Ciri's journey. That's good.
Yeah, I'm excited, but I'm also kind of like, I'm apprehensive about, there's a relationship for Ciri that's very like complex and
People have a lot of opinions as to whether it's love, whether it's this, that, or the other. And I think that that is going to be a, I have my own opinion of it, but I just want to see if that's how that's translated onto the, put it on the page, mm-hmm. basically.
There's a lot still to play with here. So, and you, like you said, you're so embedded now with these characters that it must be, you know, quite exciting now to get to kind of take them into different directions and put them in different situations, albeit even if they're a China doll in one of those, yeah. or a China figurine in one of those yeah. scenarios, it's, you know, it's a change.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, and there's so many moments of the books I'm looking forward to explore as well. And hopefully we get to play them.
Have you got any favourite monsters still to come?
Yeah, well, there's one that's revealed at the end of the season that I'm excited to see that monster like come, yeah, to play.
I'm excited for Bonheart. He's a person, but he's a monster.
The two are not mutually exclusive in this show, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And what else have you got coming up? Are you working on anything else that you can talk about, or is it straight back into The Witcher at this point?
At the end of season three, I went and filmed Planet of the Apes. So, cool. Yeah, but I'm done with that.
Right.
So I'm just floating, waiting for the next job.
Waiting for a few more scripts to come through for next season and see where you're going next.
Yeah, I mean, who knows when we'll start filming, to be honest with you. I mean, the industry is, you know, a bit of a discussion right now. So I think there's a lot that's unsure, I guess. So
yeah.
I think we're all just tentatively waiting to find out what exactly the next steps are.
Well, fingers crossed everything gets sorted out so we can get back to The Witcher as soon as possible. But thank you so much, Freya and Anya.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Right, that may or may not have been an interview. Let's move on to news. Other than the news that HBO are selling off their goods, do we have any other news that we can share?
Yes, I've got some Apple TV news.
Oh, do you?
The Morning Show, the date has been revealed as September the 13th of the new series, with the first two episodes dropping. And then what happens after that? Will it just drop weekly?
Yeah.
So that's exciting for Morning Show fans.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because that news dropped literally just after we recorded last week, if you remember.
And what date is this?
September.
The 13th of September.
Are you putting it in your diary?
I'm putting it in the shared Pilot TV calendar.
On-air admin.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll move on to the next bit of news I had, which was that High Desert is being...
Axed, cruelly axed.
Yeah. Shunted from Apple TV. I liked it. It's the one with...
I know, a lot of people did like it.
Not enough people.
Not enough people, but I wasn't one of them, sorry.
Arquette played the drug addict turned private eye, and I'm really sad that it was, because I enjoyed it. But having said that, did I keep watching it?
No, you didn't. Right. Basically, it's your fault for not feeding the algorithm.
We can all agree on that.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah.
I fucked it.
Kay killed High Desert.
Sorry, Patricia. Yeah.
I can't believe you didn't start with the TV news of the week, Kay.
What?
Biker Grove.
Biker Grove
is coming back. Not only is Biker Grove coming back, the iconic British teen drama with that made Anton Deck famous. Do you not know this?
No.
My God, you have been in your own world.
You don't know that Anton Deck are producing a return to Biker
Grove. Even James knows this story.
PJ and Duncan back in the house.
Shoot me now. Literally shoot me now. James knows that.
I know.
I do.
Yeah. Oh, you must have been busy. God.
I really have been so busy. Yeah. And the thing is, I love Biker Grove.
That's disturbing. Yeah. Yeah, it's coming back. It's coming back. And not only that, it's being produced by Full World 73.
Oh, my God.
The company. Ben Winston's, my friend Ben Winston's company that he runs. Anton Deck producing it as well. Wow. And it's going to be fantastic.
I'm nervous.
Well, you know, don't be that nervous. It's only a TV show.
No, but that was like a show of my childhood.
Obviously,
they're invested in it and they have a lot of sentimental attachment. And
if anyone's going to do it properly, it's Anton Deck and Full World 73 Productions is all I'll say.
That's a great bit of news, Boyd.
I'm honestly genuinely astonished you didn't know that bit of news.
When did it break?
A couple of days ago, I would say. July the 4th, which was, yesterday, to be fair. 4th of July, which I think is Independence Day in the United States of America. So Newcastle-based Independence Day news, Biker Grove is coming back.
How many eps?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know that yet.
I don't know. PJ and Duncan have not revealed the episode count.
But potentially breakout, a lot, presumably.
The big breakout, of course, from Biker Grove, Charlie Hunnam.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, there are lots of famous people in it. Donna Eyre was in it. Then they went on to kind of be on TV, SMTV Live with Anton Deck. Jill Halfpenny was in it.
Did she start in that?
She started in it. Of course, they were known as PJ and Duncan back then, Ant and Dec.
But those were their characters on the show,
yes,
right?
Yes, those were the characters on
and
the show.
And they went by those monikers outside the show when they started doing...
The pop act.
When they did their music.
Yeah, completely.
Let's get ready to rumble. Classic. Yeah. Absolute classic.
Yeah, so it's very exciting. Very exciting.
Oh, on that musical note, have you decided what you're playing on your guitar?
I'm not playing on the guitar.
I will say, James.
Look at this. Look, my finger has entirely regenerated.
Yes. So you've got
You actually cannot even see that
it
I chopped
true,
a bit
actually.
Off of
it. He's now like, branching.
It's a miracle.
Honestly, I think I'm part lizard.
Yeah, probably. But the good news is you can now grab your plectrum.
Well, the thing is, it's still quite sore, so I can't really type with it at the moment. I don't think I can fret.
Pull yourself together.
Put a thimble on it or something. Yeah. I don't know whatever the technical term is.
Nobody needs to hear me play the guitar.
Listen, James, we've got a lot of show to fill.
Yeah.
Right? At the moment, we don't have a guest.
We're going to need some baking.
Yeah, you playing the guitar, unbelievably, is some kind of draw.
I don't think it is.
I think we should do a round where James plays random theme tunes. You have to guess what it is.
I think, didn't we do that already? We did do that already
because I don't know how to play the tunes to anything. So okay.
Guess that theme tune.
Yeah, theme tune. And it's just me going, like humming and not while holding a guitar.
I mean, needs must. That'll be all right.
We already know Boyd's quite a good hammer from this episode. So yeah,
we'll get on it. You know, maybe we'll have it around in the next Pilot TV quiz, like the one that we did the 200 show, which you guys won after you cheat.
That's why I'm confused. I'm confusing when there was a round about you.
Horror show that was
there was
the James Dyer based round with him actually playing theme tunes on his guitar, which would have been better, let's face it. Why don't you learn to use like the piano, to play the piano as well? And then we can,
I will 100% learn the piano up to say grade 8 in advance of the live show. Yes, that's what I'm going
to
do.
To be fair, I don't think you need grade 8 for some of the theme tunes that we're watching. But anyway, just yet another reason why to come and come to the live show.
Yes, come to the live show.
Yeah.
News, give me more news. Not this real, because I've not looked.
The BBC just put out first look images from Boiling Point, the series.
Mm. Yeah.
And I'm excited about this show. The other thing about, if anyone saw the original Boiling Point, the film, which was a one take, brilliantly done, I thought, film with Stephen Graham as this much put upon chef trying to work in his eatery, his London eatery. And Vintner Robinson was in it. And now in the series, he is in the series because there's one of the pictures from the series is of him. So he's clearly still in it. But he is recovering from a heart attack. And the head chef of the restaurant in a new restaurant in Dalston in London, which is the hipster kind of part of London, is played by Vintner Robinson. And I'm very excited about the whole thing. Of course, it is going to feel very similar to The Bear.
Mm. No bad thing, though.
I mean, no bad thing at all, no. So, it's not like, the idea of the original film with Boiling Point definitely was around, and I think they probably even made it before or what during when The Bear was being made. So it's not like they haven't ripped it off or anything. It's completely independent, separate, and it's a brilliant idea to do it in one take. I still don't know whether they're going to keep to the one take formula for the series.
It feels like making a rod for your own back a bit, doesn't it? Because TV shows, it's quite demanding to produce
the best of times.
But
that was such a unique element of the film. I think people, we're almost expecting it, but we'll see what happens.
Maybe they do it as a fake one.
Fake one, whatever, it's fine. Yeah. But just that start in that format, I think would be brilliant. But we'll see. But I'm excited. It's going to be on later this year on BBC One television.
BBC One television, indeed. A bit of Dune news for you.
Of course.
Yeah, of course. Love my elite sci-fi. Dune has replaced the outgoing Shirley Henderson with The Crown's Olivia Williams. Well, many things, including The Crown's Olivia Williams. So Olivia Williams is
taking on... TV show.
June the Sisterhood.
June the Sisterhood,
the TV show. Olivia Williams has stepped in to replace Shirley Henderson in the role of Tula Harkonnen. So that's very exciting. Also, Jodie May has joined it as well, who plays Queen Calanthe in the Witcher. Doesn't she, Kay?
She does.
She does. See? Kay knows. So a little bit of Dune news for you.
When is that going to be on television? Are they just filming it now?
Should we say it had a slightly troubled production to this point?
Oh, yeah, like showrunners.
Yeah, and directors and stuff, people leaving. It's been slightly chaotic, but hopefully we'll get to see it before too long, which is exciting. Love a bit of Dune stuff. Did you hear that? So Gattaca, do you know like the Andrew Nichols film, Gattaca, which is great. It really is one of my favourite films.
Elite sci-fi.
It is elite sci-fi. That's absolutely true. But you know, they were doing that TV kind of reboot on it, and that's been dropped. Showtime have abruptly ceased production on Gattaca, which is a shame. I was looking forward to seeing that.
It's a brilliant film.
It is a very good film. But so that is not happening. Okay, well, I guess then that is news. Let's move on then to this week's reviews. And first up, we have, as previously mentioned, the return of the After Party, the genre-bending whodunit, which once again sees Aneek dealing with a murder, only to call in his favourite, now ex-detective, to help deal with it, all via the medium of such varying genres as rom-coms, Wes Anderson movies, Jane Austen period dramas, and, you know, 80s soaps. Boydie, please review this in the manner of a 90s erotic thriller.
Well, one of the episodes is in the style of a 90s erotic thriller. Did you know that?
Yes.
I was going to say, that would be very clever of
very
you.
Smug, then.
He did look very smug.
Yes, I did.
Yes.
And that episode, in fact, just to say, is the one which is all revolves around Dana, the detective, the main detective character. So she gets her own episode in season two, which is in the style of like Basic Instinct. Yeah, mm-hmm. Tiffany Haddish's character, yeah. And it is fantastic. So I should say that I've watched most of the series now. Again, you know the level of addictiveness for a show if I had to carry on watching it episode after episode, and I did in this particular case. I think we all loved the first series pretty much on this podcast.
I didn't mind it. But again, this is one of these difficult things where when we first reviewed it, I think I'd only seen the first episode. And this is one of these shows where you kind of need to watch a few.
Yeah.
Because you've got to get to grips with the genre hopping aspect of it. And I think that was where I fell down with the first one. I find it tonal, you know my thing unevenness.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that in here.
I mean, it's built into the whole concept.
Built into the concept of the show.
Oh, God, it must be infuriating.
It's very hard for me. But I mean, they do a very good job of it, especially with this one, which, like the first one, I think started with rom-com, didn't it, for the first episode?
Yes,
and this one goes rom-com and then pivots straight into Jane Austen for episode two.
Yeah.
It does it very well.
So just to say, so basically, the returning characters from the first series are Tiffany Haddish as Detective Dana and Sam Richardson's character, who, remember, was the escape room designer in series one, who was one of the suspects in series one's case, along with Zoe Chow as his high school crush Zoe Zhu, and they are both back, and they are now, mild spoiler alert, but not really, a couple. They are together, and they have a very convoluted way in which they're going for a wedding, basically her sister's wedding, and there is a murder, and it's quite convoluted how they managed to bring back Dana, who's now retired from the police force and isn't really doing anything, and suddenly she's back as the lead detective in this case. And they do make very self-aware references to the fact that it's patently ridiculous that she's going to investigate this case, because it would never happen in a million years in real life. And that is absolutely fine, because I think the great thing about the After Party is its tone is kind of bonkers, anything goes.
Yes.
And to the point where it borders on, if you think of comedy, like I always think of comedy on like, there's like the really, there's almost the comedies that are barely comedies that we're talking about, the dramatic, that James often finds difficult to deal with because it's more drama than comedy and they're quite emotional and, blah, blah, blah. Then at the other end of the scale, there's like Airplane, really such stupid joke, gag after gag after gag, self-consciously stupid comedy, which I love as well when it's done well. Almost like play, often spoofs of different particular genres. And this, particularly the second series, I think the first series, even though it used all the different episodes based on all the different suspects, had different genres. So some were more silly than others, inherently. And it did have a kind of self-aware absurdity to it. But I think they lean in, to use that phrase that I hate, but I keep using it, they lean into the madness even more in the second season for me. And it's brilliantly absurd, some of it. Like, completely stupid. The Basic Instinct-based episode is fantastic.
Which app is that?
That is, it's a very good question.
It's the sixth episode.
Thank you.
Oh,
it's the sixth episode.
Yes.
There you go. Have you watched that one? How far are you in?
Oh, okay. One, no.
It is. I loved it. I mean,
you have done your research this week, James.
Yeah, it's very good.
It happens occasionally.
That's amazing. But it really does. It's the way it's shot, and even the music, it uses very Basic Instinct style music. And I love that genre anyway. Like, give me a Brian De Palma / style erotic thriller from the 80s/90s, and I'm happy. And it's really mad how they do that episode. It's preposterous. It's idiotic, but I loved it. And Tiffany Haddish is having the time of her life in this episode, because she's all actually objectified. You know how in Basic Instinct there's lots of shots of Michael Douglas objectifying Sharon Stone? Mm. Well, in this, Tiffany Haddish objectifies this other guy. And it's brilliant. She literally lasciviously watches him undressing and all of that. It's hilarious. Of the new cast members, Jack Whitehall is fantastic, I think.
Yeah, he's really good.
Really, really good. Paul Walter Hauser is really funny. He's like this self-conscious kind of like detective. He thinks of himself as a detective who can investigate the murder himself. And he's got like an old school 40s style film noir hat. And sure enough, his episode is in the style of a film noir. The quirky indie movie episode, which revolves around the sister sister, played by Anna Conkle, is also fucking hilarious as well, skewering the self-indulgent pretensions of certain types of indie films. I could not get enough of this series. I think it's a brilliant idea. I love comedy whodunits anyway, which is essentially what this is, you know, in the same way Only Murders in the Building. In fact, Only Murders in the Building is a good example of something that's not quite as mad and stupid as this, but sometimes veers close to it. So this has got its own territory in the sudden revival of the whodunit, and particularly the comedy whodunit, which we've had loads of recently. Poker Face is another example of it. But this is definitely at the most stupid end of that genre. But I love it. It's really well done. The cast is fantastic. I could not get enough of it. Bring it on, yes.
Everything that Boydo said. I'm new to this. And I would have to say, for anyone who hasn't seen the first season, this is as good an entry point. I mean, it wasn't so...
You don't need to have seen the first season.
Exactly. No. I mean, and no, it's obviously it's called case, isn't it called Anique the sequel or something? So at first I thought, oh, shit, do I have to go back and watch it? And I was actually going to do it, given due diligence, I was going to watch it. But then I thought, no, actually, let's just see if I can get on. And it was, I just found it hugely entertaining and funny. I just like the inventive nature of it. And so I also watched another episode, which I'm not usually one to do because I'm so busy.
The Jane Austen one.
Yeah.
And you can't, I think you have to, because get to grips with this show, you need to give it two or three episodes.
And I'll be interested to see how I get on with, did you say there's a horror element?
There's a kind of campy horror episode later on.
Yeah, so I'll be interested to see like if I still love it after that. But I just thought it was so fun. And I really like Sam Richardson.
He's genuinely great.
Yeah. Fantastic. Remember in Veep, he was absolutely brilliant in Veep.
Yeah. Brilliant. But just like this hapless guy who's trying to impress his future in-laws and just failing miserably. And you can't help but just like root for him.
He's really, really funny. You know how much I hate cringe comedy? Mm-hmm. There's a bit where he gets caught in a bush by the families of his girlfriend and he has to explain what he was doing there. And As a naked man runs by. And he has the most spectacular case of foot in mouth that you've ever seen, to the point where he just gives up. It's just absolutely extraordinary.
Are you squirming or
oh my god, yeah, but in a really funny way. Like it really made me laugh as well. It's that sort of same thing that Colin has in Colin from Accounts, where it's squirmy, but it's so good-natured and funny, it takes the edge off. Whereas I think the squirm in Succession has really hard edges.
Look, I knew
so it's quite like, it's actually physically painful.
It is different, it's because of the silliness. It's a much sillier tone, so I think it is less painful.
The silliness makes it less excruciating.
But brackets, James should give Succession another go.
Of course, and that goes without saying. That's ridiculous. But of course, I forgot the murder victim is hilarious as well, with his pet lizard on his shoulder.
The lizard is amazing.
Which weirdly reminded me of Death in Paradise. I know you haven't watched it, but...
is there a lizard?
Yeah. Recurring lizard. Okay. Well, there was. But yeah, that's a great affectation.
Zach Woods from Silicon Valley is the victim, and he's very funny. Yeah.
So yeah, it's a lot of fun. But I mean, you're absolutely right. You could jump into this second season without seeing the first. I don't understand why you would, since the first season is right there on the same streaming service. So it makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, maybe because there's only so many 8 hours in the day, I've got to do my actual full-time job.
And this is not where you.
That really did sound like you're having a go at her. Yeah. She's just admitted.
You, James.
She just said that she didn't have time to watch. And now you've literally laid into her.
Guys, he's going to pretend he wasn't talking about me. But you're seeing the real James here. Yeah. I was under attack.
That was brilliant.
Yeah. I'm simply
Everyone
saying.
Thinks he's so sweet. Oh, he plays the guitar. Oh, he's some sweet nerd. No. Vicious attack.
Like, no cake for you. Right. I'm just saying that if someone was coming, you were saying, oh, you know, you could just jump into season two, but there is no point in just jumping into season two when you could just watch season one.
I mean, point. It's all about time, you know.
Okay, I suppose they're browsing and they see it. Yeah. They should watch it. They should go back.
Well, it's one of his pet, I forgot, one of his pet hates is missing out a season of anything.
Yes.
No matter how, anthology-esque it might be.
It's upsetting.
Yeah. He gets upset by that.
I'm usually like that, but that's what I'm saying. As that person, and as a normal person, I'm saying you can do it.
But why would you do it?
Here's a scenario. I'll tell you, how about
a scenario or a scenario?
A scenario, as in the right pronunciation. Here's a scenario. Listeners to this show get very excited about the idea of watching this particular new season of The After Party. They haven't watched the first season, just by the by. They want to be up to date. They might start with the new season and then they go back and watch the first season. And that, is perfectly acceptable.
Yes, it is.
Absolutely deranged sociopathic behaviour to watch season two than season one. I cannot sanction this buffoonery.
Who is the deranged sociopath?
Yeah, it's
just I'll leave that.
No.
Just leave that.
I'll give you an example. My sister often will be, because she's like us, James, you and I, that like to watch in order stuff. Consequently, she's fucking years behind with everything. And I said, listen, just skip it. Just start, like, just watch this new season.
Or, of what? You know, what show are you talking about specifically?
Oh, God. I can't think of an actual example, but stuff that she could without having to have watched it. Or current shows. She's like, oh, no, I've got to work through the other five shows that I still got on catch up.
It depends what kind of show. It's not it a lot. I wouldn't recommend we go back and start Line of Duty on series 6.
No.
You know,
that's
go back.
Stupid.
But in this particular example, it's a classic example. It's absolutely fine to watch season 2. Before season 1, it will not affect your enjoyment at all.
Absolutely true. But there's still no reason to do it.
I've said it before and I'll say it again. Don't listen to James.
There's no reason not to do it though.
The After Party, then, which is available both seasons 1 and 2 on Apple TV Plus as of
Wednesday. It's the Wednesday half hour comedy slot.
It's the Wednesday comedy slot.
Ironically,
on Apple
I do
TV
want to watch
Plus.
The first season. I'm going to go back and watch the first season.
After you've watched this one, or just like now,
well,
in the middle of it?
If I hadn't watched the first episode of the second season, presumably you'd wrap my knuckles. So yes.
Yes.
Okay, next up we have Heat, which you'll be surprised to hear is not, in fact, a remake of the seminal 1995 movie by Michael Mann, but with Danny Dyer in the De Niro role. This is instead, although I would pay to see that.
Or a dramatisation of daily life on a Celebrity Weekly magazine with an excellent TV and entertainment section at the back.
Oh, see, that would have been a funny way into this.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I assume,
No.
Come on.
You're literally
can't believe you've gone for the Michael Mann film and not the people whose daily lives are on Heat.
That probably tells you a lot about me.
It does.
Right, okay. This is not, in fact, a dramatization of the Heat magazine office. I give a preview of this series, 5 stars.
See? That's fun. You got a self-satisfied joke out of it.
Yeah, look at it. And a self-laugh.
He's
right?
Loving it.
He's really tickled himself.
Was it a little chuckle?
Yeah.
A little chuckle. Like when I say that word I'm never saying ever again.
Oh, famously. Yes, so this is instead a kind of family drama in which Danny Dyer puts his trotters up at a friend's sort of lavish Australian home, only for his family problems to come to a head just as, wait for it, a bushfire threatens to burn them all alive. See, it's a metaphor. Kay.
We can see where this is going.
Was this hot or not?
It was lukewarm. I've got to say, I do love Danny Dyer.
That's fine. You're allowed to like Danny Dyer. Don't let yourself be bullied by this monster.
Yeah. Nothing.
No, he gave me a very weird look. Anyway.
Not for the first time.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not going to look at James anymore. I really like Danny, yeah. Anyways, and this is his first role after leaving EastEnders. What I would say is, I just think this probably is... he could have been given more heavy lifting. It's like... It doesn't feel like he's doing much acting in this. The story, I think it's not he's not served by the most taxing of scripts, is the my bottom line. As James alluded to, Danny plays Steve, and him and his friend Brad, played by Darren McCullen, being best friends, they emigrated to Australia, they met their wives, and now every year they have this summer vacation together at one of their houses. This time it's the turn of Brad, who lives in this ridiculously nice house, more property porn this week, which makes me very envious. Anyway, so they go and stay at his house. It's clear, there's no subtlety, right? So from the off, you can tell there's family tension in Danny Dyer's family, Steve's family. One, the son has a sort of a injury that, you know, doesn't really work out. The explanation doesn't seem right. They get to the house and instantly there's tension. Steve talks to Brad about it and reveals what's going on. You know, the implication is, and his wife and his daughter particularly thinks that Steve is having an affair, but actually, there's more to it than meets the eye. And so this whole thing is about two couples, the dynamics of them as pairings, but also the secrets they hold as a foursome and how it affects their family. And about the fact, as James said, this bushfire is now stopping any of them leaving from this house. So it's like how they are going to survive. I wanted to love it. I wanted to like it more because I do like Danny, but I just felt like this wasn't the best. I do like the fact that Channel 5 are investing in drama set in Australia. You know, they really are. They've had a few now. And I, as you know, I do like an...
Riptide was the previous one, which is created by the same bloke.
Yeah, so they've done a few. And as we know, we on the pod do like Australian productions. Colin.
Yes.
But this is not the one, I don't think.
What I would say is that In comparison to last week's Channel 5, Stripped Across the Drama,
totally.
It's starring West Kemp. Yeah. What was that one called?
I've got Blind Spot.
Blind Spot. Yeah. It's a masterpiece.
Yes, yes, yes. I should have led with that. Actually, the other EastEnders ex-star.
Yeah, exactly. I think this is fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
It is the word. But fine is fine. It's, it's perfectly entertaining. I actually thought it was gripping enough. I watched episode 2. I carried on watching. I want to know what. Basically, all of the people in this, every single character has a secret, seems to have a secret. Is the kind of premise of the whole show. So they're all kind of doing stuff that you're not quite sure why they're doing it, and they've all got other motives, it feels like they have. So there's lots of kind of like quite slightly heavy-handed moments where there's like a big close-up of a character, like, you're wondering what's their thing.
My favourite thing was when and it was for no reason I could think of, like, they talked about they enter the house, they got a little recce of it, and they're like, and that's the office. And they zoomed in the door. Yeah. They're like,
genuinely,
you cannot go into that room.
That was one of the clumsiest things I've ever seen.
Yeah. This is your room.
What's that room? And then the guy just pauses and goes, that's my office.
There's an even funnier
off limits.
There's an even funny bit like that in episode 2 when he goes into the office and you're like, oh, what is the secret
behind this? Is it a sex dungeon?
I'm not telling you. I'm not spoiling it.
That would make it quite
but
fun.
They've even down to like the teen characters, the Danny Dyer's got a daughter who's Mia. It's got a secret boyfriend that Danny Dyer instantly hates for no good reason.
Maybe his name's Jet.
He really hates him. It's like mad the extent to which he hates him. Then the other little teenage boy of the other family bonds with the other teenage guy who goes off on mysterious walks in the forest of an evening and literally is going like, what do you do of a night? And the boy goes, well, I'm not telling you. They've all got these, like, it is, I mean,
very secret heavy.
Everyone's got a secret.
Everyone's got a secret, and I found that quite entertaining. What's quite funny about it is this is a four-part, basically Channel 5's clear preferred format for all of its dramas, pretty much, is a four-part stripped across 4 days. I did read that they were planning on doing more longer series, which would air weekly, but I haven't yet seen any evidence of that because we're still, clearly these were made a while ago, and that, you know, pretty much every drama they show is in this format. Now, it's really stretched. I thought this was a well shot. I think the way they film, you know, the house is beautifully shot.
Yes.
There's lots of gratuitous, you know, air, what they call those
aerial
things?
Shots.
Like drone shots.
Drone shots, thank you. I forgot the word
there's
drone.
There's a sex montage.
There's a sex montage. there's more than one sex montage, by the way. And in fact, this is my point. This is the criticism about to come to is what in episode 2 there's at least 2, maybe even 3 montages of people just doing stuff that's not that important to the plot, and I was like, they're really stretching this
sex wise
no just generally okay. Like there's people like just doing,
this is where Kay's mind just goes instantly.
No, also about, like,
they're kind of like quasi romantic, and I'll be like snogging montages.
Does Danny Dyer fight off any assassins with his tackle out? That's the question.
That's the bar
to which all shows spoiler this week alert. Must be measured.
Spoiler alert, he doesn't do that.
No sword fighting.
But you were talking about how he's not given much to do. He does get more to do as it goes on, and his kind of distress and stress and his hatred of the boyfriend gets like
kind of irrational.
Quite out of hand and irrational.
Well,
yeah.
How old? Because there's supposed to be an age difference. His daughter's 17.
Yeah.
And the boyfriend is supposed to be,
I mean,
what,
he's not
30,
that old.
Maybe?
I don't know if it's that. 30, no, I think he's like 20s. Yeah. He's like, not that old. That's the problem. Yeah. He's irrational.
Yeah, it doesn't look like a huge age gap.
No, it's
them.
Mad. Anyway, but what is the montages are fucking hilarious. Again, they are like, just go back to my obsession with stupid, like, you remember the spoof montages and things like Airplane and Hot Shots and all those things? They are funny. They're really funny. And what makes them even funnier is that they have this really syrupy MOR Australian songs running alongside them. Honestly, I swear to you, please watch episode 2 because there's some very, very funny moments that are slightly undermined by these really like syrupy songs that go on the soundtrack. But I think I'm actually going to watch all four episodes because the other thing is that Danny Dyer, in all the interviews for this, says that episode 4 is mad and the twists get even more demented than the ones that happen as it goes on. And I really want to know what the fuck he's talking about. So he is, I tell you, if you want to get an actor to promote your show and to get someone to watch it, do a Danny Dyer. He's very good. He's a good ambassador for this show. And my final point is, you laugh at Danny Dyer, but he is, as I always point out, a good actor. He's a proper actor. He was on stage in Harold Pinter Plays. I've seen him doing stage performances in Harold Pinter Plays. Harold Pinter loved him, famously loved him as a proper working class guy, because Harold Pinter was a working class Jewish man who wrote rare, who's a rare figure in that in the world of theatre, writing proper stories about working class people. I won't say working class again. But Danny Dyer represented, you know, a kind of talented young guy who could do that. And then he ended up in EastEnders and ended up a bit of a joke. And he can, you know,
well,
present. No, I mean, I'm not saying for up for you or me, but for certain people like James. Maybe.
Right.
Maybe a bit of a joke.
The question but, boy, though, the question boy yeah, is, will the twist in episode 4 do me nothing? That's the,
oh, that's no, the James, please. I urge you never to use that expression again. You cannot pull it off.
I love him even trying. Posh,
can you do it again?
Posh boy Danny Dyer of jokes.
I said don't do it, but just one more time.
No, that's it.
No, that was good.
The moment is gone.
So anyway, all in all, I'm going to carry on watching it. So it's fine. It has got some brilliantly stupid bits.
Also,
but
good kangaroo action.
It does have solid kangaroo action.
For an Australian show to have actual kangaroo in it, that's what you want.
Was it a kangaroo, though, and not a wallaby?
Ooh. No, it's a good point.
Do you know the difference?
No, I don't.
No, what is the difference?
I have no idea.
Or a dingo.
Or a dingo. I mean, definitely
wasn't
a dingo.
A dingo. No, a dingo, yeah. Not no, a dingo. No,
definitely
dingo, a dingo ate my baby.
So just to be clear,
yes,
you can do that Australian accent, yes, but I can't do Danny Dyer.
That's a Seinfeld reference.
Also, he committed to it. I feel like you just said
the expression.
Well, Dingoes Ate My Baby was the name of the band in Buffy, wasn't it?
Was it? Oh, I didn't know that. I'm referring to the Seinfeld
Oz's
episode
band in Buffy,
where they quote that film that Sigourney Weaver was in about the dingo about my baby.
Yeah. Oh, based on the news story about the woman who said dingoes ate her.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So that was my reference. I wasn't doing a bad Australian accent. I was referencing someone else's bad Australian accent from Seinfeld. Just FYI. Anyway,
I see.
Heat. It's good, and not just saying that because it's got the same name as a popular weekly celebrity magazine with an excellent entertainment and TV section,
or indeed a Michael Mann film of 1995.
Or indeed a Michael Mann film. Oh yeah, and that.
Anyway, Heat then, which is on, God help you, all week on Channel 5.
Tuesday to Friday, James.
Yes, indeed. Next one. Finally, this week, we have Quantum Leap, not a remake, but a reboot of the 80s staple. This one's actually set in the same continuity. This time stars Raymond Lee as Dr. Ben Song, who, like Dr. Sam Beckett, throws caution to the wind and steps into the Quantum Leap accelerator, only to be hurled into another life and indeed another time. Who shall I get to review this one? Oh, Boyd.
Oh, that's good, because Kay Flower refuses to review this one. So, you know, it's handy that you've come to me. Yeah.
Kay, answer me a question for you. Did you watch the original Quantum Leap?
No.
I'm surprised, because I thought everyone did, not least because there was nothing else on in the late 80s and early 90s. But
The A-Team was on.
True, but I feel like most people watched Quantum Leap.
No.
When was I feel it's at the same time as Moonlighting. Was Moonlighting that period, or was it earlier?
Yeah, I think it was.
Moonlighting feels like it probably was a bit earlier, but maybe overlapped. Yeah, maybe. Quantum Leap, I think, started in 89.
In my mind, they're very in a similar kind of world of very entertaining kind of, you know, story of the week and yet kind
Quantum
of ongoing.
Leap, but Quantum Leap also had mad episodes.
Yeah.
Like the one that Satan was in, or the evil Leaper ones. Like, there was lots of crazy stuff in there.
Completely.
Like, it had this weird mythology. And I think the ending, which were, again was divisive, I thought was mad at the time, like really unexpected. It was great.
Yeah, but the interesting thing about this is it's surprising it hasn't been done already. First of all, it's taken this long, because when did the last episode of normal Quantum Leap, it's like decades ago, and they've only just decided to reboot it. It's interesting that, for me, the problem with this reboot was, first of all, this is an NBC primetime show. That's who it was made by, and Paramount Plus is showing it here.
Yep.
And it very much is in that world of mainstream weekly story of the week, James's favorite format, but also network TV kind of filming and storytelling.
But as,
and acting,
as was the original, to be fair.
Oh no, completely as was the original. But I think if there's one type of show that's really dated more than any in this world of whatever you call it, peak TV, all that bullshit, whatever we do,
it's this.
It's this.
Yes.
And I feel like I watched this first episode and I thought it was like, I could sense like a tug of war almost between trying to do, like, using the budget, stretching as far as they possibly could, because there's quite a lot of CGI in this version, and they're trying to update the whole idea of it, because back then, you know, the original Quantum Leap, you know, it's fairly basic in terms of its filmmaking, its special effects, etc. It was the format, it was the idea of this guy arriving in people's bodies and having to sort their lives out, while alongside him, that bloke played by the actor whose name I can't remember.
Dean Stockwell.
Thank you, Dean Stockwell. He was very funny.
That's Al.
He's Al. And this time round, it's the guy's kind of current girlfriend who accompanies him as a hologram, although that's done incredibly clunkily, I thought. And she's not funny like Dean Stockwell was.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a flaw in it. But what I was trying to say just now is, before I interrupted myself, is that it feels like the makers of this show are desperately trying to eke out the budget with the CGI, and yet there's loads of it that looks very cheap and mainstream network TV-ish, and not in a good way, like flat lighting and just the whole style of it and very basic direction. And even to the point of some of the performances are kind of like barely trying to be convincing, all kind of quite cartoonish. So I was like, if you're going to do this thing, I feel like you have to make it in have to give it some kind of production value of current TV, because this film, I think it's fine in a kind of like proper procedural, like a CSI or a, you know, Law and Order, SVU, all those things. Those things have been going on for decades, and we're used to them being done in a certain style. But I think when it's a new show that reboots an old format, you're like, it needs to be more sophisticated than this. And that was my main problem with it. It was entertaining as it went, but my two main issues were, it looks fairly basic, and the his girlfriend being the hologram that accompanies him just didn't work for me, because she's just too boring and kind of like not funny.
Oh, I'm with you 100%. I think that was my biggest issue, was that you don't have the chemistry, because Sam and Al's chemistry underpinned the whole of Quantum Leap.
Right.
Like, it's what made it so much fun. Especially that bit, you know, where Sam goes back and Al's trying to save his own so that he doesn't end up getting taken to a POW camp. Like, so his past like collides with him. It's great. Yeah, I think she's too bland. Their relationship isn't particularly, I mean, there's no spark at all. Like, I get that he's kind of doesn't remember who she is because his brain has been Swiss cheese, as Al would say. But again, there's nothing between them. It feels really cold and weird. And I felt like, you know, no disrespect to him, but I thought that Raymond Lee just didn't have the charisma that Scott Bakula had. He doesn't sell it in quite the same way, because you've got to love that actor and that, because he's going to play everyone all the way through it.
Yeah.
He's got to have charisma. He's got to have a real charm about him. And I just don't think that was really there, which was a shame. They do an incredible amount of narrative heavy lifting in this first episode to try and make you explain not just the plot of this show, but the plot of the previous one and how it ended and where this one goes. I mean, so much plot they're trying to ram down your throat while also doing this weird heist undercover drama thing in the background. And obviously what's interesting about this is, because the whole nature of Quantum Leap is you can only leap within your own lifetime, so what's quite interesting is we have a much younger lead. You've got a much more limited time, so presumably this is going to be set very much in the noughties and the 90s. Because what else are you going to do?
Yeah, the whole of the first episode is set on when Live Aid starts. And so that's a cultural...
So he can only leap within that period. So, you know, gone is all the stuff when Sam was back in the 40s and 50s. That's finished. They do have pictures and nods to both Scott Bakula and Dean Stockwell in this. Dean Stockwell, who I think died last year. I mean, look, this... I wasn't expecting an awful lot from this. Has it been cancelled? I feel like it's been cancelled.
No, it was renewed. Been renewed, yeah. Yeah, so there you go.
God knows why.
It feels like it's been cancelled because it's taken a while to get to Paramount Plus.
Yeah.
Because it aired in America.
It aired in the States last year, didn't it?
So, yeah, last year, yeah.
Yeah, it didn't feel essential. But okay, so you'd never watched the original Quantum Leap.
No.
And you went into this and you were like, this is... sci-fi.
That's why it feels like cookie cutter, not particularly well made, but currently,
just to say that I hadn't watched it originally, and I mean, like, I was very open-minded, and it wasn't as, you know, sometimes when I watch your recommendations, Joe,
this is 100% not my recommendation,
James, I'm, you know, a little bit bamboozled by what the hell's going on, but you know, I understood it.
It is meh. It's a whole ball of meh. Cannot recommend Quantum Leap then, which comes to Paramount Plus on
Thursday.
Wouldn't have guessed that.
Yeah.
On Thursday. What else is out, Boydie?
Well, quite a lot this week, actually.
Foundation comes out on Friday on Apple TV Plus.
Yeah, by the way, has there ever been a week? I think this is the first Apple TV Plus week where there have been such big shows launching in the same week. You've got the After Party on Wednesday and Foundation on Friday.
They have slightly different audiences.
Oh, no, completely. But it still feels like two of their biggest shows in a way.
Yeah, it's a heavyweight week for
Heavyweight
Apple.
Week. I just wonder why. I have no idea why they both decided to launch them both in the same week, but fair enough. The brilliantly titled, this is not me boasting about when I turned 18, okay? This is The Summer I Turned Pretty.
Season
two of the Prime Video teen drama about a love triangle between a young woman and two hot bros, literally brothers. They're literally brothers. That's back on Prime Video on Friday, Prime Video video. It always starts
with
on Friday.
With a Taylor Swift song, as I recall.
Yes,
it has,
I think
it has an early look at one of the Taylor Swift songs of her new Taylor's Version album.
Peaked your interest.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, big,
listen to it just for
big
that.
Swift head. He is.
Folklore in there as well.
What's the name of it, fans?
Swifties.
Yeah.
A Swift head as well, though.
On Sunday, we could have actually, this is my fault, we could have actually prospectively reviewed this, but it is the second series. But it's a surprise. I barely even remember that they commissioned this, but World on Fire, which is BBC One, quite ambitious look at World War II.
Yeah.
With Leslie Manville, Blake Harrison, Jonah Howard King. That second series of that starts on Sunday.
I did
on
not
BBC
know that.
One, yeah. Yeah.
It took totally me by surprise. I could have watched that instead of, I don't know, Quantum Leap.
I know, I'm sorry, yeah, but it was too late by the time I'd realised it was on. Because it's in the follow, because our week is tricky sometimes to see what, particularly in the old school channels, decide what they're showing that far ahead.
Yeah.
Not until basically today, okay. It's just a fascinating case staring off into space.
The Great Returns for its third season.
The Great Returns,
on
exactly.
Lionsgate Plus.
Lionsgate Plus Friday, that is. And The Great is brilliant. I mean, that's a really good show. Nicholas Holt and Elle Fanning are fantastic in that. Catherine the Great and her husband Peter. That's a really funny,
it's
kind of wryly amusing.
Lives up to its name.
It does live up to its name, The Great. I think that's mainly it. There's... Oh, you know what started, which I didn't mention last week, is if you didn't see it on ITVX, A Spy Among Friends is running on ITV on Sunday nights at 9 o'clock now, which was a really good, quite talky, but very, really quality.
Lewis?
Yeah, Damien Lewis, yeah.
And
so,
Company You Keep comes to Disney Plus, which I believe has already been cancelled.
It doesn't anymore.
It doesn't.
They're not airing it anymore.
Yeah,
yes, they didn't. Oh, yeah, well spotted. Yeah.
So it was coming, but now it's not.
I never read my emails, but I read that one.
Yeah. They literally sent an email saying we're no longer showing this in July. Yeah.
Okay.
James obviously didn't receive it.
No, You can't keep company with Company You Keep.
No.
What is our pick of the week then?
Mine is going to be.
Is there any debate? Of course, it's the after party. I mean, it's like head and shoulders above these.
Do you know what it was? I was just looking through the list of what we just talked about.
Right, you forgot.
Yeah, literally forgot. Yeah,
of course, it's the after party. It's one of the treats of the year. In fact, it would have been. I think our cutoff was literally July 1st, was it?
It was,
that's what I said.
It was.
But if it hadn't have been, then it would have been a contender for one of the in the top 20.
I'm going to say the after party, but do give Heat a go.
I thought you were about to say, I'm going to say the after party, but I have yet to watch Foundation, so that obviously could be the pick of the
moon. Outshines.
The after party, do watch season two before season one.
Yeah, or do it.
Just to annoy James.
Look at him, look at the side.
Honestly, you're the worst. right, then our pick of the week, Foundation, it is. Excellent. So you can hear about that on Pilot Plus on Thursday. I guess we're done. I think that's it. We're finished. Amazing. Please do head on to Apple Podcasts if you enjoyed this show and give us a 5 Danny Dyer rating. And please
only nice words.
Yes. No criticism.
Just send any criticisms about us specifically to
Boyd.
James.
To Boyd directly.
You can
at
feel
Boyd
that you're good. You've got a thicker skin.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Great. Thanks. And please follow us on the socials at Pilot TV Pod, at Kay Ribera, at Boyd Hilton, at James C. Dyer on Twitter, Instagram, and probably Threads as well. On next week's show, according to the calendar, the only show I have down for next week is The Bear.
Well, it just shows you your calendar is needs a lot of work, mainly from me, because I keep forgetting to fill it in.
Right.
I'm admitting it. Of course it does. No, it's quite a lot actually next week. 15 Love, which is at Prime Video's tennis-based drama with Aidan Turner in it, is starting.
Hold up.
The Sixth Commandment, which is Sarah Phelps's new series, crime series.
Didn't know that was
actually. Yeah, that's starting with a very, very good cast. Dave is back, the brilliant Dave, about Lil Dicky.
Lil Dicky.
The rapper. That's back on Disney Plus. That's just to start with.
Okay, well, you can put all of those into the calendar where we can all see them.
Yeah.
Great.
I could do or I could forget. One of the two.
I mean, I don't even use the calendar, so it's fine.
No. Honestly, just the absolute worst.
I like, there's a lot of listeners, there's a lot of good PASAG replies often in the chat. In our chat where Kay asks a question and James says, it's on the planner.
Okay, so what show? No, because we would discuss in the chat what shows we would watch. And then at the end of it, Kay would get all strappy and say, oh, could you just list them in one single post so I don't have to trawl through all of this. I just need a list of just the shows that we're covering.
Yeah, I tell you why, because it goes back and forth and back and forth, and then James spouts some sci-fi bullshit and Boyd's like, yes, or we could do this. It goes back and forth. I'm just like, okay, cool. So what are we confirming we're doing? And then he'll go, check the calendar.
And I'll say, I literally set up a calendar just for this purpose, which lists the shows we're covering.
What we're discovering, James, is that no one's filling in the fucking calendar. No one's looking at it. So just forget about that system.
That is true.
It's like the triage. It doesn't work.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to do a big calendar fill-in later this afternoon.
Well, we hope that's given you some lovely insight.
We love each other, really.
Pilot TV. We will return on Thursday with Foundation. Hooray! And next week with The Bear and other stuff that Boyd has yet to add to the calendar. So that's exciting.
I'll be sure to look at it.
Yes, and I'll be sure to compose one single post for Kay to read them all in one place. Until then, though, pile it out.